Mashile, welcome to you and your team. Thank you very much for coming back on a second occasion and for submitting the documents on time. We're going to hand over to you. Again, presentation. This time I think we haven't had a chance to read this document because we only got it this morning. And we've been in committee till about 2 o'clock. So you might want to take us through the document and then we'll put questions and answer afterwards. Thanks, Dan.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the Portfolio Committee. We certainly would like to thank you very much for having given us a second lease of life in ensuring that we do things right. And in this particular respect, we did interface with the DOC to make sure that we cover all bases and see to it that the document is as good as anything with regard to fulfilling the requirements of the money bill. And I think in this particular regard, I'd like to thank the Minister and the DOC for really having helped us understand what really needs to be done in terms of that which will pass muster before your good sir. So with this in mind, I would like certainly to introduce the people who are going to assist me in this presentation. I think for all intents and purposes, just to clear off your throat, you know, we can...
That's Dubane Musia, the CFO.
Karabo Motlana, CEO.
Marcia Sepikwa, Councillor.
Tabo Mahase, Councillor.
Simbae Sibanda, Councillor.
Stanley Mamarhane, GM Legal.
I certainly, with this presentation, would like to set the scene, indicate with a broad stroke what we are bringing forth before you. Largely, it is a strategic formulation of what we would like to see happening. And in this particular regard, we have viewed matters relating to vision and mission, which is really where we are hoping. It's a question of where we hope the country, in terms of our role and responsibility, should be placed at, and how we are going to take the route that leads us there, that is mission. Clearly, the strategic objective is also helped by us having observed the external environment and seeing what our strong points and weak points are, and finding out strategically what is it that we will, because from a point of view of understanding what strategy is, what is it that you will do that will impact the external environment and how you are going to be impacted by the external environment. And out of it, then you formulate realistic targets around which you think you would like to at least do as much as you can to achieve something that will lead you to the right path of finally arriving at the conclusion of your vision. But important enough is to be able to say, we will have the grand plan of actions, the detailed plan of actions by way of regulatory project and the business plan of indicating the marrying together, the synergy that arises from vision, whether vision talks to mission, strategic objectives talk to the mission, and the detailed plan of action talk to the strategic objectives. I think that in itself is roughly how I would like, and the budgeting surrounding that. That in itself will be very helpful in sort of giving out a kind of a framework around which we would like to deliberate with you on this matter. In this particular, we haven't really changed our vision because it still have to be realized. So until such time we realize we'll change our vision, the vision still stands as it is. So we've just tweaked it here and there for us to say we'd like to be very effective and credible, and to transform the South Africa into information-oriented economy, let me put it that way, and a knowledge-based society. You all know that from time to time, eras have got their own economic focus. There was the industrial period, railway lines, chemical industry, manufacturing industry, etc. Over and above all, we realize that the information superhighway is the way all of these things will be realized. And the societies are moving towards the era of information-oriented society. And much as we would like to see with our ICT is to make sure that we utilize these services, these technologies in order to be as knowledgeable as we are as a society so that we live within the currency of civilized societies. We don't want to lag behind in that particular regard. So with that in mind, of course, this is where we'd like to be. The mission is how we would like to achieve this. Clearly, the services that are known to us that will have to be delivered is telephony, TV, and IT services. In other words, you're talking about broadcasting and telecommunication as well as computer services. So while they are, we'd like to make sure that we would like to provide them at affordable price. People can ask, what do you mean by affordable? You know, that can always be argued. Where market is effective, then the price should certainly, where the consumer's countervailing power and there is an effective market, that price should certainly, in terms of market forces, should be affordable. Or if need be, if there are SMPs, then we can impose pro-competitive pricing regimes. And we hope that will achieve the economic growth and social development of South Africa. Now, our strategic, the broad plan of actions, that is really how I'd like to put it, that marry into the vision and mission, are very, very obvious to a lot of people. People will wonder why I have to repeat the known, but it's just for the sake of emphasis, as you can see from them, without going them on a single point by point. I think there is clearly an understanding of where we would like to do as our broad plan of action. Clearly, we do things in the public interest in order to ensure that all stakeholders, operators, investors, consumers, the government, policymakers, regulator, all work towards a win-win situation. And that is what we mean in the public interest. All stakeholders having a give and take and making sure that we live evenly together, equitably together, in ensuring that everybody gains something. In that particular respect, clearly some of the things that have been enumerated here are our core businesses. Without going into the details of this, I think it's clear to everybody that it cannot be any other thing that we should really focus ourselves on. I would state further that we do licensing, where the objective of licensing is not licensing for licensing's sake, but to make sure that those who are good in providing these services, ICT services, are given the opportunity to do that. And we certainly, in that particular respect, as we license, clearly competition arises out of many licensees that provide the various services, et cetera, and all kinds of things. And with competition, we know that from time to time, some of the operators could end up creaming the milk and leave take the cream and take and leave off the skimmed milk. And we'd like to make sure that in this particular respect, operators should make sure that they also have an obligation towards universal service obligation, that the remote areas that are not attractive from an investment point of view are catered for. Rural areas and depressed areas, underserved areas, we impose mandates in all that respect, proportionate obligations in a way. I mean, we don't put in obligations that will end up killing the goose that lays the golden egg, but very proportionate. And of course, with regard to our further mandate is to make sure that as far as competition is concerned, we make sure that we create a competitive environment such that it is as effectively as imaginable to an extent that the consumers can benefit in terms of choice, price, and quality. If you go further, the important aspect is managing scarce resources like radio frequency spectrum, as well as numbers and also right of way. When trenches are dug, etc., that's a very, very scarce resource. One can look at it differently, but you can't just dig willy-nilly across the road. The environmental issues are so there. ICASA and all other related municipalities have got to take care of situations like that. So that's the broad thrust of licensing, competition, universal safe management of scarce resources. And then, of course, certainly, as I pointed out, we have the vision, mission, and all that. We need to now say, out of the strategy, what kind of underlayer, the so-called infrastructure, the strategy, the superstructure, if I were to use that, and then the underlying foundation should be, do we have a shared vision? Is the structure conducive to what we want to achieve? This is our attempt in terms of the structure. And then, of course, human resources will talk, the CEO will talk to how we create reward systems. The leadership style is important. Training, etc., and all of those things are important because we have an issue of balance scorecard, where not only do we have to manage financial resources that we have, we must make sure that we meet customer need, we must make sure that we fulfill all the projects that we have geared ourselves on any particular period to complete, and that in itself calls for training. That, in a nutshell, trying to point out that this is really a systematic approach to how we would like to. So this is organigram, and as we have already spoken about it, the upper layer talked about the core services that have got to be produced in terms of licensing, as I pointed out, marketing, competition, engineering, consumer affairs, legal, etc. Those you would all agree that these are very, very core. And then we've got the supporting structure underneath, from time to time, finance, CFO, compliance, see to it that we do the things right. HR will see to it that they live up to making sure that ICASA is an area where everybody wants to be at, and we should strive to provide the training and an environment that is conducive to attract the best skills. Now, these are the regulatory projects that we certainly have got to look at for 2010-2011. But I'd like to take you to this page, which I hope, which in a way, no, I'm sorry about that. I think it's, there are key projects. They are in Annexure 1. If you do have the documents on Annexure 1, those are the projects as identified for the year 2010, financial year 2010 and 11. I'll just briefly indicate, if you have that page, that there are those priority projects that we feel are key and important for execution. Those are the more or less 20% of the projects that will make 80% of the difference. And I think we'll be more focused on this year. These are the priority projects that we have indicated. As you can see on that page, the division from which they're coming from, the business page where the details of that project can be looked at in terms of scheduling, completion, and the cost. Those are the pages, business pages that we have. Of course, the projects that are highlighted, I think, in CREAM, priority projects, we have the licensing of DTT. And I'll only emphasize on those that I think needs a little bit of consideration. The license of DTT is really in order to effect the migration of analog terrestrial TV services to DTT, two masts have been conceived. And this is consistent with the ITU Treaty, Geneva 2006 Regional Radio Communication Conference, and the Minister Digital Migration Policy Directive. So there is no contradiction between what we are doing and what the policy directive was saying in an ITU conference that was concluded in 2006 on Region 1. ICASA will, as a result, be amending the licenses of the incumbent TV broadcasters to include DTT. We're talking about the migration period, and in this migration period, it means the incumbent have got to move to DTT. Now, one will understand that then you'll have to use extra frequencies. While they are still on analog, you still have to look for frequencies where they will be on digital. And that in itself calls for no dividend at that point in time to entertain new players. Only after the switch off, which will happen, and that can be talked to at the date at which it is conceived, 2011, November, will only depend on the availability of set-top boxes, because you cannot talk about dual illumination. throw out a signal which is digital and people don't have set-top box. So that will be determined by the availability of set-top box. Then the countdown could be made. We have not, as it was understood, that we have decided on the year 2015 as the switch-off. It's not in our regulations. Everybody should have the opportunity to read through. We made it clear that the date will be determined by the availability of set-top boxes. So that's just in a nutshell, because I know that it has raised a lot of topical issues as to when is the switchover going to happen. It can only happen when you have a large size of majority having set-top boxes, because the digital televisions will still be very, very expensive to purchase. The economies of scale will kick in later, maybe after 2015, where the cost of a digital television will be affordable or a little cheaper than it is. So in that particular respect, I hope it will be, but questions may arise. Mobile TV is almost the same, consistent with the ITU treaty of Regional Radio Communication Conference. The minister issued a digital migration policy which provides for the establishment of two single frequency networks, or call them two maxes, for mobile TV. And this regard, ICASA will be licensing RF spectrum on a competitive basis for two maxes, multiplexes, for mobile TV services. This is in terms of Section 31 of the ECA. As I said, I'm just emphasizing on the key projects that I think need mentioning. Competitive framework, call termination regulation. As you know, we are already in line to deliver this particular project, which is a do-or-die project. And we've done a call termination market review, and regulations will be designed to impose pro-competitive measures, and they will be in place by June 2010. The local loop and bundling also calls for going through a market review as it is required, and then this relates to the last mile. Even though people talk of last mile, which is 1.6 kilometers, normally dependent on the exchange station to how far the last person who connects to that is from. If you're about more than 5 kilometers away, you will get very little off. Broadband services, because the further you will go, there is attenuation, because you've got to have that line also incorporating voice, and as you amplify voice, you will attenuate broadband services. So it should be understood that only up to about 5 kilometers at least will you get the fullest breadth of bandwidth. Beyond that, there will be challenges. But one should also note that we have got a very serious social challenge with regard to copper cable theft. That in itself means people put in copper, it's stolen, they put it back. So the viability of local loop and bundling using copper cables really is brought to question as to whether you do the same thing as copper is taken out, you put in another one. We haven't solved that serious social problem. But of course, we do have challenging technology like fiber to the X, to the premise, to the home, to the curb, etc., that may render all the investment in the central office redundant, in a way making it negatory, and therefore stranded resources will be put in there. Because what Telkom will do is say, okay, you can have the central office, I'll take my fiber out there in the curb, or to the building, or to the premise. And the fiber has got the broadest bandwidth available, that the consumer will be wise to say, you know what, I think I'll go for the fiber. So we are facing that with fiber being rolled out. That in itself is a very important aspect to consider the viability of local loop under the present dispensation of challenging technology like fiber, as a matter of fact. So, but notwithstanding that, as it is required by law, regulation, we'll have to consider the various options. The options are Bitstream, to sell Bitstream as a wholesaler, or shared loop means you can have that loop by providing voice and the other party providing broadband services. That's what is called shared loop. And then the other one, full loop and bundling, since you take that loop out, it's given to a competing operator who will provide both voice and broadband services or internet services. But we will, as required by law, notwithstanding what the impact of that would be, to look at the whole market and therefore make sure that the remedies that will be imposed will be fair, transparent, and non-discriminatory. Of course, with interconnections, regulations will oblige all ACNSs not only to interconnect but also to interoperate in order to make any-to-any connections. This will ensure that access to these services and networks are fair, transparent, and non-discriminatory. That's interconnection and facilities leasing. I will also, these are just the key ones that I don't want to go, but because they are, for this current year, it is very important to emphasize. The review of handset subsidies, if you look at that page, it tells you who the people will be, what the cost is, and as you notice, the last column indicates the number of staff that are involved in any project that we entertain. Average is six. That single page gives a sort of a summary of what it is. So I'm emphasizing on the underlying details on each of these operators, or of these projects. So that will be concluded as is indicated there within the coming quarter, which is before the end of June. It's been pushed over to there because of documents still need to be vetted so that we make sure that it's foolproof in terms of challenges that may arise. Carrier selection and carrier pre-selection, of course, this, just to explain, allows subscribers to one licensee to access the services of another licensee on an ad hoc or predetermined call-by-call basis by adding an access code as a prefix to the dial number. If I want to, I'm Vodacom and I would like to take advantage of MTN calls, I have a prefix there because of the advantage of low prices that have been put in there. So that's what the carrier pre-selection and selection is. The spectrum fee regulations, of course, the regulations are creating a basis and a criteria for the charging of RF spectrum. This will relate to using multiplication factors depending on the usage of such services. I'm just explaining the details of what is in the first page, just to zero in. I hope that there is no loss of details as I'm explaining. Okay, I appreciate that. So the spectrum fees are such that we have to look at the usage, maybe use the baseline cost and multiply by a certain factor depending on whether it's for exclusive use, which means that there will be a higher factor, or shared, which means that the factor will be maybe a fraction, or whether they're for rural, suburban, urban, or dense, or national coverage. So there are factors that relate to that to determine what the cost is. It's sort of pseudo-scientific way of saying, what is the value of the spectrum which is used in dense areas as opposed to the one that is used in rural areas, or one that is shared rather than used exclusively. So the pricing will go in that way. And this, of course, project should certainly very helpful in making sure that frequencies are used effectively and efficiently. If you were to use a spectrum non-efficiently, you'll pay a heavy price. So you may have to consider abandoning that particular frequency for the cost that it entails. Of course, there is also the licensing of high demand bands that we are looking into, like the 2.6 gigahertz that relates to broadband services and the 3.5 gigahertz. Those frequencies are very much in high demand, especially going to 4G networks. But I have been advised by somebody who says that the cost of putting out infrastructure in the 2.6 gigahertz band, given the fact that the wavelength will be so small, would require a lot of base stations, far much more than you have for 3G. And someone made an example of saying it will cost $1.7 billion for anybody to roll nationwide to provide broadband services using LTE, as an example, maybe even WiMAX, as an example. So operators, I think, are looking at that and wondering whether they should not club together and maybe have one network which is shared and compete on services. But we, from our side, will do what we were asked in terms of allocating those spectra. 2.6 will be for mobile services, 2.6 gigahertz. and each operator will have a maximum of 30 megahertz, and the rollout should be nationwide. And then, of course, the 3.5 would be per municipality, two operators per municipality with a duplex of 2 times 14. So get the two operators for municipalities, you got 285 or 87 municipalities. So each municipality, because this is geographical and spatial, there will be interference into another area. That in itself will roll out as much as possible. So that in itself will result in the regulations being issued, and this will be concluded by June 10. And of course, the review of the E-rate, we had the E-rate regulations, but they had to be reconsidered in the light of the fact that it was determined that most of the public school can't even afford the bare necessities of just simple acquiring books for education, etc. Where are they going to get the money to pay for, even if it's discounted by 50%, where are they going to get the money for paying for internet services? And I think there will be intervention necessary in this respect, and I'm sure USASA and the DOC will look at how best to help out those that cannot even afford their basic necessity for education. Not to say that internet services are a luxury, but the cost that is involved will have to be looked at from a policy point of view. With that in mind, I'll just give a feel of some of the key projects that we are going to have to undertake this particular financial year that are key, that will make 80% of the difference, and the cost of for each project are initiated there. The period of completion is shown, the councillors involved on which some of these projects will be in their PMSs, some of the project leaders that we have, and the staff numbers to each particular project. The details are found, the divisions, and the business page, 3, 4, 5, we can, if you want, needs to, we just have got to flip back and say, okay, on this particular project, let me find out how it is rolled out in terms of scheduling and the quarterly cost. Then you'll be able to go to page 3 or to look at the licensing of DTT or any other one. So we are leaving to the request that we should be, you, good self, should be able to know precisely what is it that you are approving, wherein you can apply your discretion and say, no, I look at this project and I've gone into the details and I realize that this in itself is not something that you may consider following up. So the discretion is in you, but we've given you all the information necessary on any of these particular projects that we have on this page. As you can see, the cost is 11.5 million, and all the other details are in the business plan. The other projects have been laid out because it's a MTF, a three-year cycle. We've got a project that we put on, though not in details, of 2011 on page 10. Those are the projects that I'm relating to. We have just enumerated them. The details are not as refined as we have them in 2010-2011, but it indicates that we've looked into what may happen in the coming years, because there could be changes that arise, but we've mapped out in terms of what we need to do. 2012 and 13 is also shown there, as you can see the project enumerated. I think at this point in time, I will hand over to the CEO to deal with the operational matters and the business plan and the subsequent document that in this file.
Good afternoon. To you. Good afternoon to you, Chair. Just to take you through a number of pertinent issues. Of course, as you know, the detail is attached in terms of every single project, both regulatory and non-regulatory in the PAC. So as you know, the deliverables, the financing attached to it, and the time frame for achievement, it is attached. We also have in the PAC an organogram for the organization, staff complement, broken down into the various divisions. Just on operations, there are a couple of higher level issues that we have to attend upon in the coming year, principally to ensure that our litigation and general support division is properly resourced financially to deal with the challenges that are almost inevitable in the sector that we operate in. To also make sure that the internal adjudication mechanism, the CCC, is also in a position to investigate and adjudicate complaints. We have an ongoing study to review, optimize, and align our organizational structure in line with the ECA. It's been conducted with an external consultancy called Adams Hills International. It is hoped that their work will be complete in May. They have produced a phase one report, but we're waiting in the next month the phase two report. You want me to move closer to the mic? Yeah. We're waiting for their phase two report on the organization. Hopefully, it'll give us a terms of reference to begin a far more ongoing revision to ensure that CASA is fit for purpose. Allied to that is a integrated talent management strategy, which both Adam Smith International and the local consultancy called 21st Century are working on, to integrate both skills profile, remuneration, and work activity in one mechanism. We're continuing in terms of work process design to implement an ERP system. That's an enterprise resource planning system. We did in this current financial year work to determination of a software system. What we'll work on in the next 6 months is in identify a vendor to do the integration, and in the course of the integration phase, to work out a costing mechanism, because ERPs are by their nature very expensive and also take a substantial amount of time and resources to implement. So there's quite a bit of focus on ensuring that we do it in the current year and we do it in a financially efficient manner. From the administration side, what we're working on in addition is a document management system, particularly to ensure that we are able to capture the vast quantity of documentation that ICASA generates electronically. This is done in the context of the National Archives Document Management and Archiving Plan, and every single process that we work against in terms of document management is benchmarked as against their systems. This is ongoing. We've done some work in the previous year. We would hope to have an e-document management system in place by end of financial year. A continued concern of this Parliament has been the high cost of rental of ICASA's head office in particular. We are continuing with a relocation study. We've done this in a thorough manner as we could, in the sense that we brought in location experts to work through what is optimal in terms of location for ICASA, interviewing staff, interviewing our stakeholders. It's come back to say more or less the same area that we're in, and more or less the same sort of transport routes that we're locked into. However, the relocation should generate a lot of benefits in terms of a reduction in cost. However, as a physical move of this nature, given its scope, it will take time. We would hope to close off on it either by the end of this year, if we're lucky, or in the middle of the next financial year. The regional offices are being assessed for fitness for purpose, and they are being relocated. The first of those offices that has been moved is the Durban regional office. The move takes place next month. Following on that, there'll be a relocation of the Cape Town and Port Elizabeth office to areas where they have better visibility and better accessibility to our stakeholder base. Thank you. What is highlighted in not very clear detail, I hope you can read it, is really year-to-year budgets of ICASA as against the 2010-2011 year, 2011-2012 year, and 2012-2013 year. What should be noted here principally is that there's been a reduction in the allocation from DOC. The DOC asked that in the next financial year that we take out $10 million in costs, and for the succeeding years we take out a further $15 million in costs. This is being attended to. We're willing to await your questions on what has been presented. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and the CEO. And Ms. has open for questions, comments. Advocate Langer.
Don't fall on your back. I'm going to congratulate you. You know, this annexure you've given us is the first time ever that I've been involved with the ICASA that I feel I'm now starting to see what you're doing. So I really want to congratulate you. I think this needs still a lot of work. But what it is, there's a plan now that we can look at, that the department can look at and comment on, that role players can look at and comment on and tell us if they think this is the top 80%, is it in the right order. What I will now like to see is a breakdown of this, because you're saying, you know, on each of them have a project, and then break it down to say, by this date we want the plan with the counselors. By this date we want to engage the department on it, so that we have a better idea how you take all this, because this is a lot of work. And you really have to plan it properly, else it's not going to be done in a year. And break each one of those down in much more detail in terms of the timelines and the flow of it. So that everyone, your counselors, your staff that are working on it, the industry, everyone knows how to input into this process. So I'm not commenting on the correctness of it. I'm not commenting on the detail of it. I mean, others will do that. I don't know. But what I am wanting to congratulate, for the first time it feels to me as there's a system in front of us, and we'll now have a ICASA that works much better in terms of systematically dealing with issues and bringing them to finalization. And in the process, if you break it down in those time frames, then we will also have a ICASA that is completely involved in the process. And then the department can involve, we can now, the chair can now sit down and look at this and work out a plan. How often we're going to meet you to see how far these things are. And for the first time we can really start doing oversight work. So I just want to congratulate you for, I know that you had a lot of these plans. You've just not sold them properly to us. You're starting to do that now. But as I say, I would now like you to see you convert these, each one into a project with even a more of a flow and more information involved, so that we're involved with that. I think that's really my only comment I want to make. I will feel much more comfortable now approving the money. I see we've got here only $11 million in the operational. I'm sure other people that know better than I will now engage you. Where is the rest of the $290 million? I'm sure most of it's on salaries, as it usually is. And that's fine. That's not necessarily a bad thing. But one needs to also see that breakdown. Because it helps us to see that this is 11 million, Chair. But of course, the overall grant you get from DOC is 290, I think, is it? I think the CEO just showed us the 290. So I think I would like us to bring that a bit closer to each other. That if you are saying that 12 people are working on this, then clearly the project budget is probably different. It's probably the, you know, that if there's one person working on three projects, then at least one third of that person's salary should be part of this project. That one can see much more clearly. We need to, you see, the big problem we have in this country, I have, is that we don't break down finances and what it costs us. So we go for schemes and so on. These schemes cost us so much money, which we may not even then need or would be a lower priority. So having said that, nothing of what I said is a criticism. All I'm saying is encouragement. All I need, all I would suggest, Chair, if the committee agrees, we now need this broken down much more clearly in terms of the money, in terms of the time frames, when what has to be done, and that will help us tremendously as a committee then to do our work, and I think it's going to help everyone, the department, ICASA and so on, for each other to hold each other to account. Thank you, Chair.
May I just indicate to you that in this bulky document, I think what you're asking for is there. There are many, many pages there with each project and time frames and approved and not approved and those kinds of things. So just glance through that. Mr. Van der Berg, did you have your hand up?
Thank you, Chairperson. Now we have an idea of the vision and the mission and where you're heading to. Can you give us a breakdown? Because I think it's very important. Where are we now? I know we're in a good building, but important outstanding matters. Because we've all heard before that, for instance, it takes a year or 2 years to finalize a project to provide a license or whatever. Can you give us just an idea where are we now? And very, very important, outstanding stuff at this stage. You are working on, and I think what is also important, these outstanding matters, maybe it's important because 2010 is a very, very important year in the ITC sector. Thank you, Chairperson. I hope I made myself clear. Thank you.
Mr. Mashile, okay. Can I just tease you away? You know, it's so well organized. Just look at the bottom of page 11. It's there in the big file.
Thank you, Chairperson. But you said in the beginning, we just received it this morning. Sorry for my ignorance.
No, just teasing. Mr. Mashile, you might want to respond to that. Went out to page 11, but I have also indicated on some of the projects that need to be concluded in the first quarter. Those are the ones that are outstanding, apart from the ones that we have achieved, 17 of them, as shown for the year 2009-2010 on page 11. DTT, licensing of DTT will certainly be concluded in the second quarter, mobile first quarter. All of those that are on the first quarter of completion in terms of this broadsheet are the ones that were outstanding, which adds on to the 17 that we have already accomplished. I'm sure you are aware of interconnection, facilities leasing, review of handset subsidy, and licensing of high demand frequencies, etc., and all that. Those, as indicated here, that are outstanding from the previous, the current period, will be concluded ASAP within the early months of the next financial year. It's indicated that the quarter in which they will be concluded.
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 27, the head office relocation, I see that although you've got a budget for the relocation and the breakdown of that on the next page, you do say from the current location to another site, which is yet to be determined. If I recall, you have appointed some organization or some company to find your premises. Is it so difficult to find the premises in Johannesburg? Or do you want to move to Cape Town and we can maybe help you? But this has been ongoing for quite some time, and I'm quite surprised to see that you still have not found a proper premises. And you still have the consultant who's doing that work. The other one is that Also something to commend ICASA for on page 23, 4.1.2, the prioritization of the budget and cost savings. ICASA has cut international travel by 3 million, and they've also cut consultants by 4 million to get money for the CAPEX cost for the World Cup. But can we keep that cost down? It shouldn't return next year because we don't have a World Cup. I think you have to develop a system whereby if you can do without it, you must stay within that framework. So that is to be commended. Although the budget for travel in on page 22 for the 2010-2011 years still 6 million, it's also very high. So did you cut the 3 million from that 6 million as it's reflected now? Or is it the 3 million that you cut, if that figure is supposed to be 9 million? The last one, on page 12, where you have listed the high priority projects all in bold. It's quite a number that you have highlighted. This is priority number one. Do you have another list that will fall in sort of a lower level of priority so that when you finish these, we know that the second list of priorities will be these issues. And is your date for the interconnection rate still June? June this year or June next year? This year. Thank you, Sebas.
I just want to indicate on that page that we have, which gives a summary of all projects, we have legend down there which shows priority projects and secondary projects that will then indicate the other and of course the projects with no budget are funded from OPEX. I think on the other question the CEO is well versed to give some responses.
Just on the head office relocation, as I explained earlier, it's a fairly detailed process. The first company, the consultants that we spoke to, all they did was a relocation study, optimization study of where ICASA, in a spatial sense, needed to be located. In terms of approvals of design, floor space, that is the Department of Public Works has to give its approval, and consequent to that, the DOC and Treasury have to give their approvals in addition. It's quite an involved process, but it has to be done in a systematic basis if we are to get anywhere. On the travel budget was cut from 9 million to 6 million. ICASA has to do a fairly extensive traveling in terms of meeting both ITU, World Radio Congress, and Africa region, postal and telecommunications issues, as well as broadcasting. So in cutting this year, we'll probably have to go back to recoup some of that expenditure because the travel demand does not go away.
I would like to add my voice to say thanks to ICASA. I think we get a far better understanding of how money is allocated, etc. If we look at the overall picture and we look at the budget, then clearly one has to understand that just about two-thirds, if I'm not mistaken, of the budget actually goes in, well, more than that, in operational expenditure. There's very little on CAPEX, which is obviously the nature of your work, because it's human intensive, can I put it like that? And therefore the costs are very high. If we look, I just want to know more about your training costs. what is the nature of your training costs that you have? Do you not attract the right people, or is it just to make sure that your staff complement remains sort of up to date with new latest technological developments? Secondly, you have referred to the office rental. What are the indications at present? Would there be any savings, depending obviously on the process? I mean, we all understand that. But your offices where you are situated at this stage and similar space offices, would you be able to find cheaper facilities for your needs, requirements at the Casa? And then just a question on the motor vehicle expenses, which is also quite high, it's almost $2 million. Would we just get a better understanding of that? You've now reduced your travel expenditure. What is the idea behind? Is it part of employee benefits? What is the nature of the expenses that you have on that school? Thank you, Chairperson.
I'll just go through those.
And can I ask, Chairperson, do we still need to keep this? Is this outdated? Because otherwise, is this now off the table? Because it's been reduced. And it's now being replaced by this nice thick document. Okay, I just want to get rid of some of the documents.
We need more butter, we love it.
Just to answer your question on training, ICASA does spend quite a bit of money on training. It's almost 3% of staff training costs. Of total staff cost is spent on training. That, in part, arises out of the nature of the organization. We do need to keep abreast of trends of methodologies in terms of the sector that we regulate, the sectors we regulate. What we have done in training is try to localize it, whereas in the past we have taken a group of ICASA people overseas for training. We sought to bring the trainers to South Africa and to ensure that more people get the requisite training that is required. That has been a continuing trend, and we hope to keep it in that, to keep that mode of training going. If you look at the actual numbers, the training cost really rises about 300,000 per year over the next 2 years, so it looks manageable. But as you indicated, we spent quite a bit of time and place heavy emphasis on adequate training. As to location, on the optimistic side, we are looking at a reduction in cost of about $10 million from relocation. The premises that we have were inherited from MTN and later from Microsoft as they moved out of their startup premises in Johannesburg, and they're extremely expensive. And they're not really fit for purpose. We are looking to ensure that whatever premises we require are fit for purpose, and that we do believe we can obtain substantial savings in cost as well. Okay. Lastly, you asked about motor vehicle expenses. When you look at this issue, it's not about a staff benefit. None of these costs that you see in respect of motor vehicles speak to any individual staff member ICASA. These are specialized vehicles that do spectrum monitoring and have to be specially fitted for that purpose. And really, that's what the cost incurred in respect of motor vehicles speaks to.
In terms of the performance agreements, did you sign that with the minister or how far is that process?
Actually, on the Monday before the Faithful Tuesday, we had a workshop at the DOC wherein we tried to look at the document and see where changes could be made. And then we came to the conclusion that this was by and large a very, very good PMS document. There are a few things that need to be tweaked, and we have agreed with the DOC that these documents, PMSs, will be signed off before the end of this March. by April, then that will be a kickstart.
The draft document was circulated to members, and I know that we had to look at them because there's some responsibilities that place on the shoulders of the committee, and we might want to discuss whether we want to assume those responsibilities or not. But I had asked Mr. Delanga to just to look at it from a legal point of view, and I think he's got some views on the matter. I don't know if that's what you want to talk about.
The document's a good one. I know during another life of mine that most of the SMS people in government get tested in that way. I'm wondering about whether that's the best system to have. If you want to check performance and make corrective action out of performance vis-a-vis what we've got now in that plan, it's a salary increase mechanism. My gut feeling is, and I haven't done enough reading, comparison reading, my gut feeling is, if you want something to see if a body like a regulator, there must be a mechanism to see, do we increase the salaries? I don't have a problem with that. But I'm not sure that that is the right performance mechanism that we can have. Where you have a mechanism, where you work through the department, you come and put that performance before Parliament, we measure it. Now what we're going to have is we're going to get a document in front of us to say, the chair was good with this, good with that, good with that, good with that. We give him 122 points, that means he's in this salary increase bracket. What even horrifies me further is that part of it is cash bonuses. Now, yeah, I sit there and think to myself, what cash bonuses are we going to give to ICASA? We're going to give you a bonus, a cash bonus, for doing your work. Only difference is you're going to do it well. So I must say that we haven't had a chance to discuss this, but I just wanted to hear your views. As a salary increasing mechanism, it seems to me a good, a mechanism that's good because it's basically taken over from government. But as a mechanism to analyze how good you're doing your work and how we correct it where you're not doing it, it seems to me that that mechanism doesn't create that possibility. So I wanted to just hear your views on that. And then I must say this idea that there's a review mechanism, that when this body decides you this good, that there is then a review mechanism to review whether, that's a terrible thing because, every person is going to say I want this reviewed. No person is going to accept if they know there's a body that reviews. And I'm not sure there's a body in government that reviews your assessment. Otherwise you will never get to the end of it. You are reviewing and reviewing and reviewing. You'll never get to it. So those are just some of the things I wanted to hear your comment on. Maybe I'm just ignorant and I haven't done enough reading on it. But those things are really worrying me the idea of the Act is I couldn't see that the Act links it to salary increases. The Act really links it to performance. And so those are just some of the things. As I say, I have not bounced it off my colleagues, but I would like to hear your comment on it before I put something in writing. Thanks, Chair.
I'm not too sure whether you already have the document that relates to the proposed draft framework for performance management system. But if you can permit me, it is stated here that there are five levels that have got to be looked at. Level five is outstanding performance, and by this we mean that you have achieved exceptional results against all performance criteria and indicators and maintain this in all areas of responsibility throughout the year. That's the highest level, consistently doing the right thing the right way on all of the things that you are supposed to be measured on. Now, the level four talks by coming up with you have achieved a better than fully effective result against more than half of your performance criteria indicators, and fully achieved all others throughout the year. So you should have achieved others, but in more than 50%, it should be over and above what you have. Now, level three says fully effective performance, which means performance fully meets the standard expected in all areas of the job. The appraiser indicates that the incumbent has achieved fully effective results against all the performance criteria and indicators as specified in the work plan. For that, you don't get any reward because that's what you're paid for. That's what is expected of you to do what you are asked to do. So there's no reward for that. And the lower level is when performance is not fully satisfactory, by which means that you have achieved below fully effective results against more than half of your, if more than 50% of the key performance areas have not been fulfilled, well, then that is not fully satisfactory. And corrective actions in that regard need to be taken by way of training, mentoring, and then being asked to through the review session before the full assessment comes. But we are giving you this period to improve on what you're doing because we're not happy with what you've done so far. So it's an intervention mechanism, failing which then higher level steps could be undertaken. Unacceptable performance is where you have not even done well in all the areas that you were supposed to have been. So reward is only at level 4 and level 5, where you have done exceptionally well, went over what was expected of you on all of the areas of performance. And then level 4 is if more than 50% of those areas are over and above what is expected, but the other 50%, you are still consistent with what was required of you. So that's what I believe DPSA, in terms of government, is subjecting everybody, unless I'm mistaken, but that's the understanding I got, and this proposal was more or less made aware to us that it's consistent with the DPSA.
Okay, can I just hold further questions on this? If I want us to complete the strategic plan and the budget, and then if we've got time, we'll come to this matter. Mr. Kulwani?
Thanks, sir. The annexure one, this one, sir. I just want to check on number two. You've got your universal service and access regulations. Number six, you've got the same. What's the difference? The other one is saying quarter, the other one is saying the fourth quarter. What's the difference between the two?
If I were to take you back and see that the third column shows business plan page, that's where the details of that particular project will really speak to what we meant in this respect. I'm not sure if you have page 3 of the business plan, which talks about it's KPA 1.2, actually. Everything there really makes reference to the bigger document. It's in the licensing division, business plan, page number 3, and the KPA is 1.2. It's amendment and transfer of ECNS and ECS and BS licenses. And as you can see, it says it will be, if I'm not mistaken, quarterly, which means from time to time people will come and submit amendments of these various licenses. It may be wrong to say universal access and all that, because it really does not talk, because these are just licenses that are transferred and amended, and there's got to be a hearing in that particular regard. So if you go back, the details are related. I think this index shows the business plan page, which then talk about greater details that will indicate what will be done in each and every quarter and the total amount that will be expended. The same applies to all of them. If one has just got to make reference and page through on that third corner, I think the framing of saying universal savings and access on amendments and transfer is misplaced. The other one, which can be spoken to, which has got the same topic, it's on page 5, which talks to KPA 1.5, which developed universal service, I think, obligation regulation. So there we have it on page 5, the one also that has got a similar topic, which is very much misplaced as far as I'm concerned.
The one is in terms of section 10, where you have to amend the licenses to revisit a parity of universal service and access obligations. The other is a universal access regulation. So it are two different processes, however they need to be done simultaneously. And it will commence in this current financial year. A study was undertaken, and now the implementation phase is going to follow in the new financial year.
You see, the problem is that those are priorities, and the summary is fine, but they look alike and they look the same. And then I'm just saying, if you got this page and go through, but you are explaining, but what you are saying is not what you have written here. I'm just saying, you see, what you are explaining is not what is written here, when I just read it the same thing. So I'm not sure whether you don't want to maybe redo one of the two, so that they are clear what they are talking about. Currently, that's a global thing which you might not understand sometimes what exactly is that. But I just want to say that I'm sure it's well said. I'm not going to repeat how the document is well done. Maybe I'll talk when we come to the next item after we finish this one and so on. But the issue, Chair, which I wanted to understand is a matter which has been raised in passing. That is true that out of the entire budget, only 11 million will spend on projects. After the entire budget, you see the budget around 300 million, we are going to spend 11 million on the project, and the other money go to the other thing. I just want to get that where I have covered. That only the 7 million is focusing on your core business. Your core work is 11 million out of the 300 at all. In terms of, you know, because that question has been raised in passing, but I didn't get a clear response around that. I'm just following up to that question. I'm sure that will be one. The second question, Chen, is the matter which has been raised. Maybe the CEO can respond again. The issue of traveling, the international trip, which is we have cut. Which have cut down, say, 3 million or something like that. When the CEO was responding, he indicated to say
it does not seemingly mean that there is no need to travel. But we are talking about the traveling, this international trip to go to your other organization which you are working with. Now, God, Chair, I don't want to be happy that the money has been cut. Unless those trips which we have cut, they are not necessary to perform your duties or they don't matter in terms of performance of duties. But the CEO tried to respond and talk about the recouping or something like that somewhere else because it's necessary to travel, but we've cut out. Just want to get it here. Is the actual cut or is that a cut, but we'll find a way of getting some money to continue those trips? I need that to be clear. So that if it's a cut, it's a cut, but if it's a reduction, but somewhere else, we'll try to get money to continue with the trip. It's as good as leaving the sea. I'm just raising that. If that will be the situation, unless there will be that cut, clear cut of 3 million and so on. The last issue, Chair, which if you read the weekend newspaper, I just want to check whether it's the same thing, which might be the situation which is happening. The 1. Something million for recruitment, which incrementally goes to the other financial year. What exactly is that? Are you recruiting staff into ICASA? I'm just checking. The recruitment is 1. Something million is going up. I just want to understand that exactly what because you see over the weekend one of the departments has spent close to 2 million. That's for recruitment and the other thing. Whether that is the same thing. But what this recruitment we are talking about is the recruitment of staff to ICASA. Going up as the year progresses, or the nature of your staff. I know that the poaching is very high. Maybe you anticipate that every year, financial year, will be recruiting, because they will be taking staff anyway, at the tune of 1 million incrementally and so on. Maybe that's what informs the recruitment of staff, but if it's something else, maybe you can be able to explain as well. What is that recruitment? Because you see, I'm asking that because on the same breakdown for general administration. You see, what recruitment specifically for general administration and other expenses. Maybe the CEO will ask this. So you've got general administration, you've got recruitment, you've got other expenses. I understand the other expenses, maybe can, but I just don't understand the recruitment, the general expenses then and other what exactly maybe you can assist on us. Otherwise the other thing has been well said in the document, well done and everything. Thank you.
I just would like to respond to why would we have costs for projects at 11 million given the fact that the budget is to about 300 million. I think largely ICASA is almost like an organization that depends on brain power. Most of the people who are recruited are recruited because of their knowledge base and understanding of the various areas that I have referred to, markets and competition, engineering, and licensing and all that. These people are coming from a specialist type of training and they've got to be employed, and you've got to employ them at rates that will make them want to work for ICASA. So the salary bill will probably talk to why. It's almost like a law firm, you know, most of, or an engineering design company, if I were to put it that way. It's the engineers who do the design, etc., and they are paid for that. So most of the costs will result in them doing the work from inside. And I guess the projects that you see them are separate from the salaries that these people are paid. So if you were to add the salaries to and say, okay, there are 6 employees on this, and they work for such a period of time, let's take their salaries into that particular project. You will then realize that the amount will increase. Because that level is separate from the salaries of the people who are working there. And therefore, if you add those people who are working there in terms of their salaries, then you will begin to say, oh, this is really what it costs. The other costs, of course, are doing all kinds of consultation processes, doing gazettes, and sometimes hiring specialists on certain key issues where knowledge is transitory. And by and large, I think that should be the real explanation as to why 11 million. We could work it out and find out of all the people that we have on the side as to how many, shall I say, human hours they spend, and then take their respective salaries per hour and say, you spend 6 months and your salary is this, therefore this is what should be put into the project. It will then make a little bit of some kind of understanding as to this is something that can be incorporated to see the true cost of a project in terms of the human resources that are allocated there. I'm not too sure whether I came across clear in this regard, but I'm sure we can work it out to make it look realistic in terms of the resources that are deployed there. I think the other questions that may be responded to, I would defer to the CEO.
The three questions you asked. The first was the one on travel. As I said earlier, travel is very necessary for ICASA. We have to budget for it. If there's a World Radio Conference, it takes about 3 to 4 weeks for people to attend. And it is expected of the country that not only will the administrator in the DOC, but the regulator is expected to attend the World Radio. Same with the Postal Union Conference. What we have done this year, because we are faced with the real pressures of the FIFA World Cup, is effect an absolute cut on the travel budget. So in real terms, the international travel has been taken out of this year. We'd want to reinstate it next year. That saving is going to be used to fund CAPEX. If you look on page 24 of the pack, you'll notice that there are quite a number of unfunded CAPEX items that we'd want you to have a look at and to consider whether they're worth funding both for the coming financial year and the next two financial years. All those project lists there are quite critical to ICASA and its mandate. With regards to staff recruitment is difficult and expensive at the best of times at ICASA. It is not the first choice locale for the graduates and the expertise that we're looking for. And it tends to make recruitment lengthy and rather complicated. We're basically still working to find a general manager to come in and run markets and competition after Keith Weeks left to go join the the Competition Commission. And that has forced us to look for a specialized consultancy to locate the people and to then to shortlist a suitable candidate for a kind of interview. We'd hope to interview these candidates in the next month, but it's taken us almost 6 months to do so. The last question you asked was on general administration, and I'll ask the CFO to speak to that.
In the general administration, you're actually including the issues like the safety, welfare of the staff, like awareness, AIDS-related issues, and making the staff to be aware of that. It also includes things like protective clothes, particularly for our regions. I think also it answers the question why about 11 million is being spent on the project. I think if we actually are aware that in the regions there's a lot of work that is being done, I think the CEO has actually indicated on the inspection, on the monitoring, on the compliance, which is actually done throughout the country, all the 9 provinces. So it's actually a huge work that is being done. That is why you have that skew budget which is more towards the operational. The projects, yes, are very, very critical, but the money is not that much. As you know, like also the projects, they take a longer time to actually to be completed. And also is that some other projects also is that they're actually being done internally with our staff. So the money maybe seems to be small. Somewhere you find that it has actually been cut. Amount is actually being done by consultants. So that also explains the skew allocation.
Hey, can I just pose a question or two here? You know, if I look at your budget, and I don't want to sound critical because I think very complimentary remarks have been made and I share those remarks. And I will, you know, in my concluding comments, reconfirm that I think that we are quite pleased with this, with the document before us. But if I look at your budget, 160 million rand is staffing, 41 million rand is rental. 200 million of the 290 million rand is just for those two items. Right, that two-thirds of your budget is your staff and your rent. Now, for me, I mean, if you take any business organization, what I want to know is that are we getting 160 million rand worth of effort and productivity from the staff? So that's the critical question. All the other items, operational, general expenditure, etc., I mean, those are small items. We can say, all right, it shouldn't be so much for communications or so much for travel, but I'm not particularly concerned about that. Central question for this organization, as far as I can see now, are we getting our money's worth from our staff? We are accepting already, and I think all of you have acknowledged that the rentals are just excessive. If we look at the rentals over a five-year period, we would have bought out two, three buildings, actually. It's not cost-effective to be renting at this rate when you can buy out your own building. So we've accepted that, and I think the CEO has indicated that we're moving in that direction. Fine. But then the biggest item here is your staff. And, you know, from an oversight point of view, there is nothing... I must be clear, there is nothing in front of me or in the committee, or there has never been anything in front of us which says, look, this is where the bulk of the expenditure is. We're getting our money's worth. So my question is, I think your staff figure, I saw it somewhere, 405 or 485, I just can't find it page now. Am I right? It's about 400 and some odd people? Yeah. Should we be carrying such a large staff complement? Are those the best skills we've got? Are those the right skills we've got? Are they suited to your projects for the coming year? Should we be having more, I mean, full-time carrying all this load of full-time staff? Should we not be getting more specialists for on a contract basis for specialized projects? I don't know. But I mean, if I look at your work output, right? I would say that 50% of your projects from last year are carried over to this year. That's what the bottom of page 11 says. 50% or more of your projects from last year are going to be carried over in the next financial year. And they at different points of completion, etc. But then I must ask myself the question, what is the staff doing? Now, I'm sure your technical people are out there, they're looking at the radio station masks. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of technical people doing work, etc. But I don't know if this is the most productive organization. And what happens is that you come as counselors and you catch the flag. You have to account. You're the front face of this organization, the buck stops with you. So, you know, I think this is going to be an area that we're going to have to start engaging. And I'm not saying I'm going to start retrenching willy-nilly and wholesale, no. But I think we've got to look at this organization and see whether it is really the kind of organization and staff complement that we want for the tasks in front of us. I'm just putting that either in comments, questions. Maybe there can be a response now, or we can pick it up at some point in time. Because, you know, you, I mean, Eric is right, Professor Eric is right. If you got an operational budget, what is it, project budget of 11 million, and you got 400 people working, what are they doing? Practically just what are they doing? I don't get the sense. Can we get some responses to that? And then I want to also recognize Lindy and Mastori. And then we make this the last round. But I'd like to get a response. Okay. I'll take all those hands. You want to come in on this issue?
Yeah, just to save time. Because it relates to your issue on page 11 in the project introduction, it says, you know, the rollover has resulted because of a result of, you know, of, as a result of several factors, and you've included interdependencies between projects, frequency of litigation, lengthy but necessary vetting processes, etc., etc. Now, the frequency of litigation is an issue that came up during the interconnection hearings that we had last year, quite frequently, as I recall, and with our interactions with you when we went to Johannesburg. So further to what the chairman has said, you know, if you've got such a big staff complement, is it geared towards dealing with, you know, the MTNs and the Vodacoms and the Neotels who've got top, heavy, you know, weighty legal departments as compared to yours? Or is it full of administrative staff? Are you aware, you know, of whether or not you are channeling your staff complement in the right direction? And if you are, is there any plan in the pipeline to do anything about that? Thank you.
I can maybe preface your concern about whether we are doing exactly what you're supposed to do in terms of our output. I think cognizance should be given to the fact that we are regulating a multi-billion rand industry with operators that are well-resourced on matters of, like I pointed out, our core business licensing, competition issues, universal service obligation, management of scarce resources. And we're going to match them one-on-one. If you were to find out the regulatory divisions of these operators, how much they have put in terms of their resources compared to a monthly collection of some of the people, you would actually say it's a Mickey Mouse playing around in a lion's tail. But for all that it is worth, I think our annual plan, annual report, let me put it that way, tells specifically what we had done on any particular year, but is evaluated and assessed by this committee, wherein you can indicate and clearly see the amount of work that has been done on each and every particular year. I think we already have indicated about why it is 11 million, because we have not added the salaries of the employees who are in there. That is kept separate. So I guess the question of 11 million could be four times that, if one averages that. Maybe look at it from that angle and say, well, put in the cost of all the people who are working on this operation, and let's find out precisely what the figure is. Maybe you come up to a different figure and a better sort of reasoning on that basis. We have taken out those costs separately. I would say that from time to time, there are challenges that we are facing at ICASA because we are not well-resourced. Maybe in terms of the fact that the best people that we can get, we cannot afford. And therefore, we have to live with the average. And when you have got the best person on anything, you got to consider how long that person. We had a kid here who we thought was going to save us in markets and competition. No sooner had he come than he had left, and we were struggling to get someone in that. I don't know whether we should give up and say, you know what, it's going to cost us a lot of money. Let's forget. Let's make do with what we have. And at the end of every day, we don't deliver. So we are caught up between the devil and the deep blue sea as to precisely what is it that we should do so that we don't get doomed. And what is this that we don't have to do so that we don't get damned? So these are the very serious challenges that we are facing. But from time to time, there will be performance evaluations from counselors where you will be able to evaluate and say, you know what, you did a good job, or you didn't do a good job.
etc. Now that the system will be in place, and this translates down to staff members as well, it can be followed in the most appropriate manner as to what corrective action, if someone has got to be fired because that person cannot do a job after having taken due processes, etc. But it would be deceptive to want to believe that from a strategic point of view, to work Vodacom, MTN, Cell C, etc., and all that, and say, you know what, we'll take them on. It's a David and Goliath here. Let's just look for a sling and a stone, and we'll hit them hard. It's not going to happen. They preempt, actually, they use the same resources that we are using to start with, even though they are so well-resourced. They also consult. They pay lots of money to get international consultants to face little ICASA. And that in itself tells you the challenges that we wish there could be some understanding and empathy. We're doing our best, and we hope that we will be assisted and guided and supported in where we are failing, to be told how we can get assistance and support. But people get discouraged. Maybe I should look for another organization, because it looks like I'm going to damage my professional reputation, because so much has been said in the media about this organization being useless. I better get out of here as soon as possible. And you know where those people go? They go to the operators, and they do the best job, because the operators have value for council employees. All of the regulatory departments are headed by ex-council employees. If it were not because ICASA is producing the best, those people will not be where they are. So I think there must be a balance in this particular regard. But I think Councillor Supuka can maybe explain that came from the
before member. Before the council is coming, I'd like to hear the CEO. He runs the staff.
In terms of the project for 2009 and 2010, I spoke earlier, the fact that we have an international consultancy looking at ICASA to establish whether we're fit for purpose. They have done a phase one report. We're waiting for a phase two report that will benchmark ICASA, headcount, skills, as against best practice in the world. We will make that study available to you later in the year.
So the first report has been tabled?
The first report has been tabled and will be made available to you as well.
Okay, and the second report is coming in when?
In May.
In May. Okay, fine. That would be a document to work from. Okay, Mastery.
Thank you, Chip. I'm interested to know, as you have just said, Chairperson, that one of the commitments you have is this universal service obligation. But I've just perused all over. I don't see anything that would inform me of ICASA's outreach advocacy program. How are you going to communicate the plans, and what percentage are you going to be telling us about? How are you going to communicate this to the public? The other question I have for you is, to what extent are your regulatory interventions going to grow ICT industry, and what percentage of that?
I just want to get the second part of your question. You mentioned ICT. I think the first question on how we are interfacing with stakeholders with regard to universal service obligation and access, and to what extent are we educating the consumers out there. We have a division called Consumer Affairs Division. I think if I can say that the last annual report
indicated the activities of their involvement with consumers through awareness, making them aware of what their rights are, and going all over, especially in important days like World Postal Days, and going with the DOC and any other place that the DOC may be going, or there are concerns about non-delivery of services like television services, and also challenges relating to unavailability of cellular telephony. We normally call in the operators to accompany us to go and find out what the outcry is there and how they can make amends. And the Consumer Affairs Division goes all over the country together with the regions that we have. I think in every province we do have a ICASA region where there is a better interface with the locale there. So we may not have fulfilled that requirement fully, because I can be sure that there are people who are not fully satisfied with the outreach that ICASA is trying to maintain or fulfill. And I guess this is again where human resources are involved. People have got to go there, set up town meetings, and communicate via some means of advertising, radio, television, newspapers, that ICASA is coming there, please let us hear you all. That is actually happening. And monitoring and enforcement demand actually human bodies. You know, notwithstanding the number that you may have, but you need human bodies to go there and find out if, for instance, people are selling contraband equipment to be sealed and seized, and also to make sure that if there are interference, someone has got to go there in a vehicle, well equipped, as the CEO pointed, to check out who's interfering and who's licensed, who's not licensed. Those are body counts, if I were to call it that. Someone has got to go up the mountain in a 4x4 and do all of those things. So we may have fallen short, but at least we have that as a responsibility to protect and promote consumer interest. And we've got a specialized division called Consumer Affairs Division to put out precisely what their projects would be for any particular year. And I think even this document on the details in the Consumer Affairs Division will indicate precisely what are the projects that the Consumer Affairs Division would be involved in, which is really at the coalface of interfacing with consumers. And complaints that are received for us are recorded and investigated, where the incumbent culprits are brought forth and asked to make amends and redress on all of those things. I think we could probably do much with the resources that, or automate, as it were. Maybe that's where somewhere we can reduce the headcount by automating some of the things that are sort of mandatory and automatic, and then say, okay, we don't have need anybody to do this. Just press a button. But it's not often the case. Most of us really find it challenging to automate some of the issues that we have in order to reduce the human resource capacity. I think in that respect, with regard to ICT, that's also within the same vein of making people aware of their rights in terms of if they have complaints. The handset subsidy, for instance, talks to consumers have got to know a difference between the cost of the cell phone and the cost of the service. The consumers have got to have a flexible period of a contract. And I think I will say not much about ICT, but hope that value can be added by other councillors who may have got a kind of a better understanding of how we have to respond to the question that is posed. If there are any amongst all the councillors who can add value to this, I think that would be helpful.
Thank you, Chair. I think the question around ICT wanted to find out how
ICASA uses ICT to grow the industry. I think one of the objectives that we have is to promote competition, because we believe that through competition you'll have an expansion of services, and that should lead to quality products and services at lower lower prices. And in that sense, if you promote competition, you should be able to grow industry. But all the other interventions that we have really are meant to grow the industry, to make sure that there are players, that there is fair play in the market, that there is a level playing field, and that anybody can come in at any time and then be able to offer services to consumers.
Okay. Lindy, Julie, and Insiki, that will be the last.
You
covered.
Okay.
Julie?
I just wanted to come back, I think, to the issue that you mentioned a little earlier. That is just, I think what we wanted to establish is the model and the staff complement. It is really delivering value for money. I think that's the essence of it. Now, from your page 5 at this stage, it is evident that in some fields you have more vacancies than in others. And I just wanted to know if it is a regular occurrence that you, for instance, have in engineering and technology. If I calculate roughly about a 14% shortfall in filled positions. Similarly in licensing and compliance, and that is actually a crucial one. I think what we wanted to determine is, if we hear from people who are making applications, etc., sometimes there's a sort of a complaint of unnecessary long waiting period. Is it as a result of vacancy that you cannot sort of process these applications quicker, or is it as a result of less sense of urgency from those involved in the operation? I think what is good is what the CEO has answered, that, you know, he's busy with he will get the report back to evaluate the effectiveness of the institution. And I think that would be very, very valuable. Because essentially, from what I heard what the chairperson was saying, if that is all we want to determine. Do we have enough bodies, but are we not perhaps carrying too many bodies with less sense of an urgency that they are not really performing, and, you know, because sometimes you can have meetings, endless, you know, meetings can consume days and weeks and man hours, but you need to see the output at the end, and I think that is essentially what we want to establish. The cost of delivering the output, is it worth it? And I think that study that has been conducted would really help us to establish that. Thank you, Jay.
And Siki, can we take your last question? Chair,
I just want to ask you, your regulation it seems to be addressing the state of force. But what I want to know, your focus in terms of regaining the investor confidence, what is your focus in terms of regaining the investor confidence?
I would maybe would like to get a response from one of the councillors to help in providing an answer to that to this very important question. I think it is, without a doubt, key and important. I think maybe if anybody can volunteer from the side, but the question of our turnaround time is key. There's no doubt about it. And I must confess, it's sometimes very much disturbing, given the complaints and concerns that are raised. And we have actually come up with manuals for processes and procedures from the various divisions, which are still being worked out, to actually try to find out on a very, very, very informed basis as to where the bottlenecks are, why the delay, and all that in terms of, is it because we don't have the right stuff, or is it because it's too much work? And I think in concurring with the CEO that we do have this company that is really going to look at the roles and responsibility of each and every person as to, on an eight-hour day period, what are those people doing? We wish we had time clocks, you know, where you slot it in that I've done this and you slot out, then you would know at least how long that person has done. And we know that some of the jobs are not just mundane, because they need critical analysis, evaluation, thought processes, etc. It's almost like surgery. When you conduct surgery as a doctor, it's normal routine. You just cut someone, you open up. But once complications arise, then that's where the doctor comes in and say, under these circumstances, how do I save this life? And that would be the value that that surgeon would be adding, other than the normal routine of cutting someone's flesh and doing that, which are just mundane. So we do hope that the people who are involved are not faced with challenges as to how do I deal with this thing. It's out of this world, and I'm responsible for this, and I have no knowledge. And maybe that's the reason why there are delays, where people just get frozen and say, I don't know how to solve, and I can't take it to the CEO, etc. I don't know how to resolve. That could be the challenges that we are facing. And I think there needs to be a proper evaluation, which is forthcoming. And that would be very, very helpful. But I would like the key questions to be also
resolved. Mr. Staki and Asha.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, honorable members. My response is going to be very short, actually, because the focus is competition. And if one looks at the type of regulations that we are expected to publish or to make within ICASA, they are all focused at competition. That would be really one word, competition. One can then elaborate what is the impact that competition is going to have, for example, on quality of service, on prices, and so on and so forth. But really, honourable member, the focus is competition. Thank you, sir.
We have a partially liberalized market where we have lots of licensees in terms of ECS and ECNS licensees. But those licensees are not able to operate because we don't have the competition framework in place. So that's where our focus is.
I just wanted to add this, and I think it's a reality that ICASA faces on a daily basis, is that, you know, the ECA, when the ECA came into being, it expanded regulatory functions. The legislator correctly then expanded the size of the board, which is council, and added, I think it was from 7 to 9, to help ICASA cope with the extent of regulations that were going to be then promulgated. What ICASA did not do in response is accordingly expand appropriate divisions. That is the truth reality. I mean, if I sit here and you have no idea how staff in compliance division, for example, are completely overwhelmed with work. You have one staff member coping with 40 licensees. And that's not of his own doing. It's really because the ECA then created a framework of greater competition, i.e. more licensees, therefore more demand in terms of services. ICASA should have then correspondingly at least had a budget to expand the staff component with appropriate skill. And compliance is highly legalistic. So you have to hire experienced legal persons to deal with the processing of licenses, either new, amendment, transfers, and so on. And it's not easy. One very key personnel in the license and compliance division went over to multi-choice. That's the reality. And then there was this huge gap in terms of function in that particular very, very important service, compliance with the operator or mandate that the regulator is required to fulfill. So sitting here, I could never say CASA staff are not performing. I think they're doing their level best with the very little that they have. The demands that they face on a daily basis from the licensees, the pace at which they are required to work, and the fact that whilst they're sitting compliance, having to match, study all these incoming applications for new licenses, they then have to fulfill different responsibilities in regulatory projects. So invariably, they are burnt out, and we must accept that we will need to expand at a staff level at least capacity and the budget accordingly. I think we must be honest about that.
I don't think it's been made obvious to this committee that ICASA has funding for 300 million. ICASA's requirements to do what we're supposed to do is in excess of 400 million. The answer is we won't be able to do everything we ought to be do because we don't have the resources to do it.
All right, I want to bring it to an end. It's an urgent question.
Yes, Chairperson, if I can just ask yes or no. I think we asked last year, if I remember correctly, if ICASA's got a frequency register, you know, who's broadcasting or using which frequency. And I think the answer was no. I just want to know if it changed.
I think from an operational side, because that's more operational, I will ask the CEO to be able to say from an operational side whether that register exists and whether we know who the operators are.
If the register does exist, then it can be made available to you.
All right. Mr. Mashile, Chairperson, and the CEO, staff members, I want to thank you. I think you've heard very positive comments from all the members of the committee. I think today is the first time I can say that there's some light I can see there at the end of the tunnel. I can see some light. It might be faint, but I think there's some light that we are beginning to see at the end of the tunnel. The text made with the door. No, I think that it's quite clear a significant amount of energy and time has gone over the last few days in preparing this document. I also want to thank the Minister and the Department for signing off on this document at short notice. There's a substantial improvement in the format, in the reporting format, as we see in this document. And I think I want to compliment the team. I don't know who was ultimately responsible for this, but I want to compliment them. We do have a clearer idea now of the strategic priorities, the time frame, the people who are responsible for that, and maybe even the staff complement. Maybe not the names, but at least the numbers of people who are going to be working, and there's a better idea of the budget. I think the biggest challenge for ICASA now is to translate this into an operational program in the coming financial year. If you can do that, I think this organization is well on its way on a turnaround strategy. But I guess we have to wait for the Adam Smith report to see what kind of an organization do we ultimately need to get it to work at optimal level. But from my side, on behalf of the committee, I want to thank you. I know there's a lot of work might have gone into this. Thank you very much, and I don't think the committee will have hesitation in approving this strategy, the strategic document. So well done to the team. Right, members, tomorrow we meet USASA. If you remember, on Friday we were not totally satisfied with the document. So we're going to call them in for an hour or hour and a half. Because they're going to be tabling a revised document. We don't want to go into too much of detail. But there the biggest question is this 180 million rand that they got for set-top boxes. And whether we really think they've got the organizational capacity to manage that fund. It's a major project of government, and I think we will have to look at it closely. So the committee will reconvene tomorrow in the old assembly chamber. Let me say the time will be communicated through the SMS. We'll see if we can meet slightly earlier so that we don't impose on the study group times and those kinds of things. So we're looking at roughly around 3:30 tomorrow. There's an EPC tomorrow, but we will just confer with the committee section and see whether we can start slightly early, as we did today. So thank you very much.
to everybody who's been present and for sitting with us so late.